An aerospace engineer and inventor turned successful patent attorney, Andrei Iancu is 4 months into his job as director of the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office. In his first radio interview, Iancu discusses a wide range of PTO topics. We spoke in the main hall of the National Inventors Hall of Fame, just across the glass atrium from PTO headquarters. First up, the fact that next Tuesday, Iancu will sign the nation's 10 millionth patent.
It's tremendously exciting for the USPTO, but most importantly, it's really exciting for this country. 10 million patents is an amazing achievement, and we're talking about the cumulative effect of 10 million patents on the history of the United States and its impact on the economy and our overall development.
And with those 10 million over the years have come something of an application backlog. And you have promised the Senate Commerce Committee, as have your several predecessors, that you would knock down that backlog. And there's several elements involved with that, pendency and the process itself. So tell us what you're doing to try to mitigate the backlog and speed up the whole thing.
Sure. And the backlog has actually been coming down. And it's been continuously coming down, and it will continue to come down. Obviously, there is a relationship between the backlog and quality, right? We can obviously prosecute patents much, much faster if we completely ignore quality. Nobody wants that. Or we can take forever and dramatically increase pendency. So it's a balance, and we're carefully balancing. We want to increase the quality of examination and at the same time decrease pendency. So we have been working, and we continue to work on that.
And if there was no backlog, what would be a reasonable expectation for pendency?
There will always be some backlog, but it depends how you measure pendency as well. But we are currently at about, on average, 24 months pendency, and we're looking to reduce that by several months.
Because technology really moves fast, especially in microelectronics and the application of electronics. I guess nanotechnology, all of these things are moving so fast. So I would think the best way to serve the economy is to lower the pendency and get rid of the backlog.
Yes, while we maintain or increase the quality of the patents that we issue.
What is the metric for patent quality? What are the several metrics?
It's a very good question. And different people have different points of view. My view is that the primary metric of a quality patent is a patent that withstands challenge down the road when it is actually being challenged.
Or it could be one that garners no challenge because it's so obviously patentable that nobody would dare challenge it.
Potentially. And obviously there are certain, there are some patents like that. But when a patent is an important patent in an industry that matters, and if a dispute arises, those patents do get challenged. And what we're looking at is to make sure we issue patent that people can rely on, that industry can depend on, and that it provides a basis for investment and future growth.
And you're going to process about 600,000 patents in 2018. Compared to 10 million, it seems like the pace of incoming patents and granting is accelerating over the couple of centuries this has been going on.
Yeah, absolutely. So we process more than 600,000 patents every year. We issue over 300,000 patents every year. Just as a frame of reference, it took approximately 75 years to issue the first 1 million patents. It's taken only about 3 years to issue the last 1 million patents.
It is speeding up, and you've got an inventory, I read, of 540,000. So that's what you consider the backlog at this point.
Right.
All right, and you mentioned, too, that there's a pilot research program to see if pre-decisional interviews can help with the process. What is going on there? What's that all about?
Well, we are looking at a host of different ways to increase the quality of the prosecution. There are a variety of factors that go into that. One factor, for example, is the quality of the application that comes into the PTO in the first place. And then from there, increasing the quality of the interaction between the applicant and the PTO from the earliest times and on an ongoing basis. So if we can have an early stage interview where the examiner and the applicant can speak to each other, try to get on the same page, we think that that could help in that regard. So we're exploring that. There's a cost-benefit analysis as well, and there are potential tweaks we're looking at with respect to that program as well.
And on training of examiners and other stakeholders, it looks like you're boosting the training programs and trying to maybe add some online virtual training. Tell us about that.
Yeah. So as it is, we're doing quite a bit of training for examiners. Obviously, I strongly believe that the more training, the better. It is a complex area of law. We deal with complex technologies and continuously increasing levels of complexity on both of those fronts. So our examiners need training, and we do provide it. We also have, in addition to the internal training that we do here, we have programs where we partner with outside groups, outside technological groups that are very relevant to specific groups within the PTO. And we encourage that kind of training as well.
So they can almost augment the examiners in some way?
They can improve the examiner's understanding, yes.
Can they also improve the examiner's productivity? Because ultimately it's a human process. There's no way of really applying software to patent examination, at least not one I've heard.
Correct.
Maybe there is.
Well, the examiners use software tools for searching and the like.
But not at evaluating content.
Correct. That is a level of human judgment that is critically important. The more training that we do in a the closer the training is to the area of expertise of a particular examiner, the better it is in terms of increasing the examiner's substantive knowledge as well as efficiency.
We're speaking with Andre Iancu, the director of the USPTO. And let's move on to some of the legal issues, because I know that that consumed a lot of your testimony, and it's something that bedevils every agency that judges things. The eligibility law and the AIA process, and you were attacking that complex to try to take some of the time and work out of that. What's going on the legal when things are, in fact, challenged?
Right. So you've mentioned two separate things. The one is patent eligibility, what we refer in the patent laws as Section 101 of the patent code. So that is a very difficult area to navigate by everybody involved in patent law and in the patent field, by inventors, by applicants, by their lawyers, by our examiners, and by judges who look at the patents. So we are looking at ways to provide additional guidance to our examiners and to our applicants that perhaps can simplify these issues and bring a bit more clarity to that process.
You'd like to head off some applications that clearly are not eligible instead of having all this process to arrive at what should be an easier conclusion?
Well, so what the issues relate to is what subject matter is potentially ineligible for patenting, even if it is brand new. So an example of that would be a discovery of nature. There's been a long-standing understanding in this country that even if you are the first one to have discovered something of nature, let's say Newton discovered gravity, we are not granting patents, generally speaking, on those kinds of discoveries.
So like something new for the periodic table would not be patentable.
So it depends, right? But if it's a brand new naturally occurring element that's being discovered in nature and it gets added to the periodic table, likely that would not be patentable, even if it is brand new knowledge to mankind. And there are other areas that get similar types of treatment, but there's confusion around the edges as to what might be in and what might be out, and we're looking to provide guidance in that respect. Last month, we issued one guidance memorandum on a particular issue surrounding this, and we're looking to hopefully do a bit more.
All right, and in with respect to the appeals process and the AIA process, define that and what you're trying to do to maybe put some efficiency there also.
Sure. So what you're referring to there is what's called post-grant proceedings that were established by the AIA in 2011-2012.
The AIA being the?
The America Invents Act.
Got it.
And the specific processes that those involved are called PGR, post-grant review, and IPR, inter-parties review. There's also an additional program called CBM that's getting less attention than the others. But these programs have been getting a lot of attention, and there are a lot of passionate arguments about it. Some people love it with a passion, and some people hate the process with a passion. We are looking to potentially bring some balance to the system, and we're looking at a variety of issues, such as the standards for claim construction, and try to balance that with what's already being done in district courts. We're looking at the amendment process to potentially streamline that and a few other issues like that. Overall, the goal being to balance the system.
And what are some of the initiatives going on to bolster the examiner workforce to try to bring it up? Do you have any plans to enlarge it? That comes up periodically. And I guess it's hard to find people that can become good patent examiners.
Listen, we have an amazing cadre of over 8,000 patent examiners here at the PTO, and these folks are highly skilled, highly trained in a variety of areas of technology. Many of them have advanced degrees. We obviously have to compete with the private sector for these folks. But you know what? Once they're here, our turnover rate is very low. In the long run, we have an amazing retention program. Overall, we are looking at increasing our examiner core a little bit, not a lot. But we are looking at helping examiners do their jobs in a more efficient way. I'll give you an example. I already mentioned the training, but separate from that, a significant part of the patent examination process is searching for prior art. And this is an increasingly difficult exercise because the amount of publications that are out there continues to increase dramatically on an ongoing basis. And the accessibility to publications continues to increase. So therefore, the overall haystack, shall we say, of art keeps growing, and we still need to look for the relevant needles in this forever-growing haystack. And that process takes an increasingly long period of time. So we are looking at improving the technology tools.
This is where some big data analysis tools and a Watson type of ingestion of all the literature in a field and analyzing it automatically could really speed things up.
Precisely. Getting big data help, getting help from potentially artificial intelligence tools that are designed for this kind of a purpose, we are looking at that actively right now. It's a longer-term project, obviously, but it's really important.
We're speaking with Andre Iancu, who is the director of the USPTO, U.S. Patent and Trademark Office. And let's talk about trademark side of the house for a moment.
Sure.
What's going on there? I mean, trademark is a much easier but much more voluminous type of activity, isn't it?
Trademark is equally important. We do amazing work on the trademark side as well. The trademark operations are incredibly efficient. They, for many years in a row, have met all of their targeted goals. Their pendency rates are low, and stakeholders are very happy with the backlog and pendency. Our examining attorneys are phenomenal. We managed to attract and retain highly skilled examining attorneys, all of them having legal degrees, for example, and the like, many of them having significant experience as well. It really is a very well-run operation.
And there's kind of a third leg in the triad of intellectual property, and that's the Copyright Office, which is part of the Library of Congress, a different branch of government. Do you cooperate with them? Do you share practices with respect to trademarks and for that process and for the copyright process?
Yes, definitely. There is close cooperation with the Copyright Office. We do quite a bit of copyright policy analysis here at the office because all of intellectual property ultimately is highly related. So for us to run a very good patent and trademark office, we need to understand and we need to closely coordinate on other IP issues, copyright being critically important. But in addition to that, also trade secrets, for example, data protection, and the like. So we do have folks here that specialize, separate and apart from patents and trademark, but we have folks who specialize on all aspects of intellectual property.
And on the operation of the agency front, telework has always been kind of a brainchild of PTO, and has PTO has been held up as an example of how to do telework. How's that all coming? Because that's gotten some congressional criticism, some GAO oversight, and so on. And are you still wide and deep into the telework system?
We are. It is a critically important part of our operations here. And not only that, it's a remarkably successful aspect of our operations. Through the telework program, we have managed to expand our operations in almost all the United States. We have people in almost all the states. We are able to diversify our employee pool. We're able to reach and hire employees who have the right training and want to work for us, but they, for whatever reason, they want to live in a different state. We also have the ability this way to have employees on the ground across the country so that in many cases interact with inventors and inventive communities around the country in an easier way.
And now that you have been on the inside for 4 months after a career of being an inventor and being a patent attorney, what has being on the inside given you in terms of perspective and knowledge?
Well, what I can tell you is that one of the surprises I've had coming here is that there have been very few surprises. What I mean by that is that the issues that the industry sees from the outside, as an outside practicing lawyer, the issues that we see as needing critical attention, for example, what's working well and what needs improvement, are more or less the same issues that people on the inside who are running the organization are seeing as well and are working at diligently on a daily basis. Things like you have touched on, Section 101 subject matter eligibility, like the AIA post-grant reviews and the like. So it's really good to see that there is no disconnect between the office and what we're doing here and our constituent groups.
So you have a glass atrium, but you don't have an ivory tower.
No ivory tower at all. We are very, very much in touch with our stakeholders, and that's critically important.
All right. Anything else I should ask that I haven't covered?
That's a question I would often think to myself to ask at the end of a deposition.
Yeah.
So, no, I think you've done a very good job. I should mention that, as you know, we are on the cusp of issuing patent number 10 million.
Right. And you can't tell us quite yet what it is, but you know what it is.
Well, I know that it's going to issue on June 19th, and it's a very exciting time. And it is an exciting time, and it's an exciting opportunity for the whole country to sit back and realize the meaning of the collective 10 million patents on this country's advancement and development. So we are all very excited about that, about using this as an opportunity to impress on the folks who are watching the importance of innovation and the great benefits inventors and the act of invention has brought to this country and, frankly, to the whole world.
Andre Iancu is director of the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office. There's much more to the interview. We'll post it in its entirety at federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive. Subscribe at iTunes or Podcast One.